Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. It is my honor to have this gentleman here. I cannot wait for us to talk about his world and how he created it so that you and I can learn from him and become better human spirits while we are here on this planet. Because you, as I told you before, you and all of us know, someday we're going to change form and graduate to the next level. But while we are here, we want to become the best human spirits possible. Gregory, welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. Thank you for coming, man.
Tim, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is an honor, man. I want you to tell the people all the fun things that you are doing today. Because like I said, I told him on the onset, I can't say there's so many. So I'm going to let him do all the talking, and then we're going to go down and break it down. Welcome, man.
Thank you. Well, yeah, so I have a bit of an untraditional job. I'm a keynote speaker. I get to travel the world and speak in front of conferences, in front of corporations, organizations of all shapes and sizes. And the way that I got here is maybe normal for a keynote speaker, but I think to most people, it's a bit of an unusual path. When I started out my professional career, I had a role as a salesperson. And that drew on a lot of the gifts that I use in my role as a keynote speaker, the gift of gab, the gift of curiosity. The gift of never being in the same place really at the same time, which I kind of enjoyed. And I know, Ken, as we were talking, you're traveling yourself.
Yeah.
But I was never really fulfilled by the work that I was doing. You know, paid the bills. More than that, it was a very nice job to have. But it didn't really do it for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean when I say it. It didn't, it didn't light that fire. And because it paid the bills and more than, kind of would have just stuck around. But life, as you said, has a way of waking us up. Yeah. And life woke me up. In 2015, life woke me up by nearly taking my voice from me permanently. I had used my voice during the day as a salesperson, but I also used it at night as a performer. I was a professional entertainer. I've worked at piano bars and dueling piano bars around the world. That was what really lit me up at night.
Yeah.
So I had this day job speaking, night job singing, but wasn't really doing what I believe I was here to do. And life woke me up in 2015. I had suffered some pretty severe vocal damage as a result of overuse and misusing my voice. And when I went to see the doctors, the specialists that you go see when you're a pro voice user like me, they look at your voice with these instruments that peer deep down into your throat. It's very uncomfortable, but they can get a good picture of what's going on in there. And he gasped. This doctor who's seen thousands of vocal folds gasped. And he said, I've never seen a professional vocalist with vocal cords that bad. And if you do nothing in the space of 2 months, you'll lose the ability to speak and sing forever. We won't be able to give this back to you. There's no surgery, no vocal transplant that you can undergo right now. So you've got to make a decision. And that was a tough conversation for me to hear because I was already making a decision. I was deciding not to give up this job that paid the bills but didn't fulfill me. I was deciding not to double down on what really lit me up, but I wasn't sure how I could make a living out of it, that gig at night. I said, you got to make a choice. The doctor said, you got to make a choice. So I made the choice. And 15 surgical procedures later to rebuild, reshape, rejuvenate my vocal cords, now I get to travel the world and leverage all of the gifts that the universe gave me. And do so, you know, what I think is in service of a greater good. You know, we were talking before we started recording, and you know, Ken, you said that it's a privilege and an honor to be able to discover who we are and who we're meant to be and the impact we can have on the world. And I'm paraphrasing a bit, but that's the gist of what you said, right?
Yep. I believe that from the bottom of my heart, man.
I'd push just a step further on our listeners, and I'd say I think it's our duty. And I think life wakes you up when we're not doing our duty, when we're not becoming who we're truly capable of being. And that experience, in many ways, is what led us to this conversation. And I'm grateful that we get to have it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Because we don't live up to our capability or what we're supposed to be doing, because I think it is the very first thing we ought to do when we come out of the womb, basically, to pursue this. But because we live in this state that we are in, we don't do it, man. And I think life is constantly, I used to say it was like a hound dog just coming after you, smelling, you got your sniff the minute you were born and just keep coming after you until you come to that space where you ought to be. I'm so glad that you did, because isn't it funny that it would come to your voice, Gregory? Of all the things that it shut down, it is that piece that was holding it together, but it was that piece that was preventing you from doing what you wanted to do. The fearfulness, the security is what keeps a lot of people trapped. The job, as you said, you know, that money that holds us to pay the bills, that space right there robbed a lot of people of getting to know who they are. It's an incredible thing, you know. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I learned a lot about fear in that process. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can say that consistency or that guarantee of money is really not as important as the fear of not having it.
Yes.
One of the disciplines that I'm fascinated by and that I do a lot of work in and study, and I'm certified in many aspects, is psychology. So I'm certified mm-hmm. in practice of positive psychology. But psychology in general fascinates me. And there's a concept in psychology called approach avoidance. And simply put, it's that we're motivated by getting what we want or avoiding what we don't want. Mm-hmm. Most of your listeners are probably going, duh, you brought this guy on to talk about that. But what's fascinating about that concept is that we are more motivated by avoiding what we don't want than getting what we want. And we make irrational choices based on that degree of motivation. So I lived a large part of my life, maybe some of your listeners can identify with, I lived a large part of my life making decisions trying to avoid poverty, trying mm-hmm. to avoid homelessness, trying to avoid, you know, being called a loafer or a shiftless loser, you know, by some of the older generation. But instead, I missed the opportunity to pursue what I love, mm-hmm. to pursue success, to pursue abundance. And life is, not to get too heady, but life is abundance. I've learned in this journey now, there is more than enough out there for all of us. More than enough. The problem is, if we all believed that there was more than enough, a lot of industries might not do as well. The advertising industry might not do as well if they couldn't create a scarcity mindset about certain things. And so I had this scarcity mindset about money, about success in the professional world. And I didn't want to chase fulfillment for fear of losing what little fulfillment I had.
Yeah.
And what fascinates me about the experience I went through, and I think the point I'm trying to make here is that there's always something more. You know, money's a powerful mm-hmm. motivator, but there's always something more. And for me, it was my voice, the actual essence of who I believed I was.
Yeah,
and as I've talked with many people, I'm learning that they only get honest with themselves about what they truly want, unless they're taught, unless they develop the skill.
Mm-hmm.
Only get honest with themselves when they face a mortal crisis.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a family member that dies. Maybe they themselves are given a terminal diagnosis or a critical diagnosis. And for me, as a singer and as a salesperson, mm-hmm. being told I'm going to lose my voice was a death-like experience.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't cancer, but you take my voice away from me. And I had to spend months in total silence while it healed. I become less of who I am. It's harder to participate in conversations. I would carry mm-hmm. around a whiteboard as I was healing, and a dry erase board and a marker. And that's how I'd have to communicate people. If I wanted to go get a coffee, I'd have to write down small coffee, cream and sugar, and show it to the person at the counter.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to participate. And I'm lucky that I got that, because some folks who are handed an actual terminal diagnosis, that whiteboard's a joke. They're literally counting down, and they have to reckon with, did I do what I believe I was put here to do, or did I simply avoid what I thought I didn't want? And that, I'm learning, is the difference in a fulfilled life, is the people that pursued what lights them up and what they were put here to do, they typically describe themselves as fulfilled. And the folks who are trying to maintain the status quo, trying to just avoid that bill collector, avoid the pain of whatever they see as pain in their life, mm-hmm. they're the ones who wind up towards the end of their life or when they approach that critical diagnosis, gosh, I wish I would have.
Yeah. I saw many of them, and from the business that I worked in healthcare and skilled nursing facility, it was a privilege to be there. I got a chance to see and have conversations with people that was at a level. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because I realized, no, I cannot do that. I want to go back now. You mentioned a couple of things about fear. I want to go back because you have to get it from somewhere. Talk to me about your family upbringing, as to what it looked like within your family, and we'll move back there because that fear came from somewhere. And I want to pinpoint, where did you pick it up? How did you pick it up? And stuff like that.
So this isn't something I normally talk a lot about, but it's very clear. The moment in my mind where I picked this up is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a, I don't know if you ever did this, Ken, when you were a little kid. Maybe some of the listeners can identify with this, but I didn't want to go to bed. And when my parents were up, especially if we had guests over, I'd let them put me to bed, right? And I'd lay there, Mom, good night, Dad, love you. And the minute they shut that door, I'd sneak over to the bedroom door, and I'd wait till I heard them go down the steps, and then I'd sneak to the top of the steps, and I'd inch down because I wanted to know what the adults were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents had one of our relatives over, and he was talking about some career choices.
Mm-hmm.
He was much older than me at the time, 20 years older than me. But I remember him saying, and I'll paraphrase because he didn't use appropriate words, let's call it.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I want to make enough money so that people don't mess with me.
Wow.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but there's so much within that statement.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much unsaid that's being said.
Yeah.
For example, mm-hmm. So if you don't have money, people are going to mess with you. Is that mm-hmm. true? As a young kid, I don't know to ask that question, so I just assume that people who don't make enough, whatever enough is, that's also another thing we can unpack, but people who don't make enough money get messed with. Well, I didn't want to get messed with. I wanted to be happy and live a great life. And that really influenced the way that I thought about choosing a career and choosing a profession.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's, you know, because we have to pick it up from somewhere. When we come into this place, we are a blank slate per se, you know. But I believe we have a lot more information than we talk about. But blank slate in the sense where we come and our parents are teaching us and people coming in and we are hearing things. And you're absolutely right, because I remember making some of those comments when I was a young kid that governed my life that I had to face as an adult. One of them was when I was a young kid, I used to save up every dime I could find, anything I find, I was saving it up. And I had a family member that would come and take my money. And I remember looking at it one day and I said to myself, I'm going to spend everything before they can even touch it. As a little kid. And I remember having to deal with that as an adult in my 20s, I realized I was lucky enough to remember that conversation and that incident to be able to address that situation so that it wouldn't cause tremendous damage within my life. I was lucky enough to remember that. I was like I was transported into that day, because I remember the heat on my body. I remembered everything. It was like I went right back, Gregory. And that thing, that statement from that little child governed my life, man. I would spend my money as soon as it hits my bank, because I had said it and not realizing that I didn't need to do that anymore. I didn't need to, you know, but I couldn't unhook. I had released words that manifested and caused the program behavior that I had to learn now how not to do that. And it is not people, you know, it was a struggle, man, you know, because you have to unhook.
And take time to reflect. That's a big ask, you know, especially as we're younger, to stop and pause and really reflect. Yeah. And it's a learned skill that we seem to get better at least I do, you know, with age.
I think so.
I certainly wasn't good at reflecting or wasn't being taught to reflect in my 20s. But it's only upon that reflection that we can identify what is it that set us off.
Yeah. And we talk about, and I wanted to bring you back there, and you recognize where it was. Talk to me about some of the other things that you packed in your luggage. Fear was one of them. Talk to me about some of the other things that you packed there while you were beginning your journey, because we have to unpack them.
fear is a big emotion, and I think wrapped up within fear is anxiety. I talk about the difference between what your anticipated outcome is the difference between anxiety or anticipation. If I believe the outcome is going to be suboptimal, something I don't like, then I might describe my emotion as anxiety. If I believe the outcome is going to be fantastic and I'm looking forward to it, then I might say it's anticipation. And so that's contained within fear. And I think it's sort of evil twin, right, is depression, is this very big concept of loss, of regret, of hopelessness. And I think just like grief is a stage, the process, the approach, the before, the during, and after of my vocal experience and rebuilding my voice contained elements of all of that. You know, anxiety and learning about the surgery and that it was going to need to happen. And then once I felt confident about the surgeon's ability and their confidence, then it became anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to get better. And I passionately believe that my choice to turn that emotion from anxiety to anticipation improved the outcomes every time. Every time improved the outcomes.
All the time. In life, everything. It's everything. It's everything because it releases a different type of energy when you flip it. Every decision that you and I make is a release of a type of energy. And so once you recognize some of those things, you have to decide, what type of energy do I want to release within this situation that presents for me? Here's your situation that's presented. And you have the choice. And I tell people that the personal walk is not for lazy people. You have to want it. And you, as you were dealing with your physical ailment, you were actually showing examples of things that you have to do. Okay, here's a situation I presented. And you knew that you made your decision. You decided what you're going to do. And I tell people about that statement of faith. You got to decide what you're going to do. You made your decision, surgery. Then you put in the work, which is, I need to know who these surgeons are. So you have to study. There's a degree of studying. Once you have made your decision, you have to take the corresponding actions to manifest what you want along with the energy that you release. Because I know a lot of people, Gregory, that has taken anxiety and fear and all those things, turn it in, and that energy just tears and rips their bodies apart because it has no place to come out. It'll manifest in all kinds of diseases. A list of them. I know that people have overcome their diseases once they recognize these energy released them and got healed. So I love the fact that you talked about your studying, because a lot of people, Greg, wouldn't even go and study about the doctor. They just let it happen, wait for the appointment. But as you said, you went and studied, and then because of your study, the knowledge, you switched over from that unknowing to anticipation. Anticipation is a form of excitement. It releases a different type of energy within the brain than if you're sitting there going, I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about it. So, you know, so that's why I tell people, every decision you make is all about the energy that you're going to release in the situation. What do you want? I keep telling people. A lot of people don't know what they want, Gregory.
Yeah, they know what they don't want. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I was one of those people. That's how I know this to be true.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of my life very clearly able to articulate what it was I didn't want.
Yeah.
But it impressed me, Ken, and you asked me, Greg, what do you want? I wasn't sure. Or what I realized I would do is I would say something that I thought everybody else around me would go, oh, yeah, that's a good thing. We do that. And it's not a bad thing that we do it. It's human nature.
Yeah.
But we don't spend the time required to create what I call root goals.
Yeah.
And so we wind up with these superficial goals, right? Good goals. Like,
yeah.
I ran into someone at an event, one of the first events I did in the year, in 2019. Yeah, 2019. I feel like time is just flashing by with COVID. And anyway, so 2019, this guy's at an event that I'm doing, and he comes up to me afterwards, and he says, hey, I hear you do coaching. So, yeah, I help folks, you know, make change.
Yeah.
Very effective process. He said, well, maybe we should talk about what's going on in your life. I said, well, I need to buy an apartment building. So that's a really specific thing to need to buy. Tell me more. Fascinated. And he said, well, I decided that I'm getting too old to miss opportunity to spend time with people that matter to me. And one of those people is my grandson. And he's at this age where I can take him fishing and we could go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know what I need to be able to do that, you know, financially, what the financial freedom that I need to do that. And he said, and I know that if I get a 30 unit apartment building, that'll provide the type of financial freedom that I need to take my grandson fishing. And if someone told me that conversation years before, right? If 2005, Greg is hearing that conversation, I would have said, yeah, checks out. Let's help this man get a 30 unit apartment building. But I had a feeling that it wasn't really about the apartment building. And so I asked him a question that your listeners can use that I encourage all people to use when setting goals. And I said, it seems to me like you need this apartment building to provide you the cash flow to help you feel certain that you can go and spend time fishing or doing whatever with your grandson. Is that right? He said, so I wanted to clarify to make sure I really understood what he said.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm just curious. If I could show you a way to be able to spend time with your grandson that didn't involve buying a 30-unit apartment building, would you be interested in considering it? And that's the really important question we need to ask ourselves. Because sometimes it is about the apartment building, and the time with the grandson is just to justify it. You just want the apartment building, but you don't want to seem like a crazy person because it's a bit unusual.
Yeah.
You want to buy a 30-unit apartment building. But if you want it, then go get it.
Go get it, yeah.
What he said was, yes, I'd be interested in hearing that. Because what it really came down to was time management. Yeah. He didn't believe he had the time to do what he was doing now for money and spend time with his grandson. So his answer was, create this completely different business that I don't know anything about. He didn't know anything about real estate. He didn't work in real estate at the time. He didn't know anything about managing an apartment building or how to get a mortgage for an apartment building or how to buy an apartment building. So he's now just created this massive time suck when what he really wants is time back.
Yeah.
And we do this in our lives. You know, the easy example to pull from is talking about weight loss. I mean, at one point in my life, I was 30 pounds overweight. Didn't seem like a lot for some and seems like a whole lot for others. It was a lot for me.
Yeah.
And I said to a personal trainer, I want to drop 30 pounds. And the personal trainer said, okay. Because you didn't know to ask the questions that you and I may be asking our you know, your listeners, Ken. But the better question is, what happens when you lose that 30 pounds?
Yeah.
What will that, and here's the magic phrase, what will that allow you to do or to feel? And when we're setting goals, if we take whatever goal it is that we'd like to come up with, whatever that statement is, I'd like to get a promotion, I'd like to marry the woman of my dreams, I'd like to whatever. The next statement, or question rather, is what will that, marrying the woman of your dreams, getting a promotion, dropping 30 pounds, what will that allow you to do or to feel or to become, whatever the proper verb is. And whatever the answer is, whatever's on the line at the end of that sentence, you know, what will that allow me to do or to feel or to become? That's the goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then we do it again. Then we take that goal at the end and we say, okay, that new goal. So I wanted to drop 30 pounds, really, because I wanted to fit in my jeans. And so fitting in my jeans will allow me to do, and maybe it turns out that it's not really about 30 pounds. Maybe it's about getting a date. Maybe it's about feeling more attractive when you go out in public. Whatever it is, it's okay. It's not, we're not judging the goal. But what I've found is that most organizations and the individuals within them set good goals. They set superficial goals. And the reason they don't achieve them is because it's easy to say, I don't care when I don't hit it. Because it doesn't really mean anything. We're not deeply connected to it. But those root goals, for example, when the doctor said, hey, Greg, you're going to lose your voice. If he had said, hey, Greg, you're probably going to lose your insurance job, your job selling insurance. I don't know if that would have motivated me to undergo all those surgeries. But losing the ability to speak forever, that was a motivator.
Anyone that was listening to us, man, Greg just gave you the key that can change your life at a degree of what you really want. If you were listening, I would go back. I'm going to suggest that you guys play that over a couple of times, put it over and over and over again, because right in the last conversation that he talked about is everything that you need to get you from A to B, like that. If you guys would play it, trust me, just over and over, just play it in the car, just leave it, and don't move it from there, because once it opens up in your eyes, once it becomes real of what he said, you will then look at yourself. You will ask the right questions, say the right phrase, and all the things. Then you're going to get up and change your life. And this is what this is all about, this conversation. We want this to happen. And no one has put it in such a capsule format in such a powerful way, and I wanted to stop Greg. I wanted to stop and bring their attention to it because it is exactly what they need. If you are not happy where you are living in your life at this point in time, I suggest you just put it on a reel-to-reel, as they say in back in the day when I was old, you know. When I was younger, now I'm giving myself out, you know. But, you know, cut that little slip right there and put it on a reel-to-reel and you're good. So I want you to talk, because I know you've mentioned so much. I wanted to circle back. You're walking with this the whiteboard. You're doing all of those things because you have an opportunity to allow other things to come into your lifestyle to start beating you up. The shame, all the other things that you could come up with walking around with a board and what people will say about you and all that stuff. Because these are real things that people have in their life. Speak to some of that, Gregory, that you had to deal with, because you talked about it, you said almost a year. Talk to me about some of those things that you had an opportunity to incorporate in your life if you choose, and how did you not take it?
Yeah.
There's a lot, man.
There's a beauty to silence that I didn't appreciate. There is a lot of power in silence. And you talk to musicians or, you know, folks in my profession, speakers, power of a pause can't be overstated. Sometimes just giving the audience a beat to think drills a message home more effectively than any sort of vocal machinations, you know, we talk in my industry about, you're going to get real loud. That can work, but nothing hits home like silence. That's why Simon and Garfunkel wrote a song, The Sound of Silence, because it's deafening. It's deafening. And for my friends who are used to me being, you know, the most gregarious, outgoing guy in the room, for me to be the guy really changed the energy, really changed the relationship in some cases. And it's fascinating to me how loud society is. I didn't really notice it until I had to be quiet. But one thing now, as a result of my vocal surgery that I'm conscious of for good vocal health, is ambient noise. And when we go into restaurants, it is loud. It is very, very loud. And that's not just a subjective sort of like old guy thing that I'm saying here. It is objectively, when you look at a decibel meter, too loud in many, many restaurants. And what do? We just learn to talk over it. We just learn to keep going. And I think that's a fascinating metaphor. What I took from that experience of silence is that life is in many ways all about velocity. If you create enough velocity, if you create the velocity for success early enough in life, it can propel you through a lot of the difficulties you face. Similarly, if you have a difficult upbringing, that can create a lot of velocity that's really challenging to change. But it's when we arrest that velocity, it's when something comes into our life. And I think we've all had that with the pandemic. We really have the opportunity to make any change we want. Because change can be challenging. And my hope is that if people are listening to this, that they're saying, you know what, this guy Greg may be onto something, because the pandemic stopped a lot of the behavior, whether it's going out, whatever it is, a lot of the behavior that comprised my life. You know, if you had to write down pre-pandemic what a regular week looked like for you, all the activities and things you would do, post-pandemic, it probably looks very different. And that means we have an opportunity to decide what stays and what goes. And so coming off of all of that silence, I had an opportunity to decide what stays and what goes. When I come back and start using my voice again socially, what do I want to do different? What do I want to do more of? I learned I wanted to listen more. I got really good at listening during my vocal pandemic. But during the recovery from my vocal fold surgery, I got really good at listening. And I learned so much in that process. Whereas previously, most of what I did was talk. I would listen to respond. So I know you'd asked about fear and about some of the other emotions that are bubbling up. But the one that revelation really put forward for me was one of joy and excitement, that I could change, that I had the impetus and the interest in changing. And I think if anybody's listening to this podcast, they too are driven in some way by the impetus or the interest in change. And so I hope, Ken, that, you know, through the work that you've done and are doing, and maybe now they're getting introduced to my work and what I'm doing, you know, that we're able to provide some value add, some strategy, some path forward for them to change. And one of the ways, in fact, that they might be able to start with that is to ask that question, what will a goal that I've set, whatever that goal might be, what will this allow me to do or to feel? What will achieving that goal allow me to do or to feel? And then continue to ask that question until we reach such a time as we don't have any other answer, but I don't know, I just want it. I just want that goal. That's when we'll know that we've reached our root goal.
What you say is absolutely right. When I did a lot of negotiation, contract negotiation when I was working with HMO, I would have to go to Washington, D.C. and sit down with the suits and these boys on the big table and all the crazy thing. And I would use silence in my negotiation. And I would say certain things and then I would stop. And I just watched them and would not move. And I knew the next person that spoke was lost. And I would watch them don't understand the power of the silence and how to utilize it to gain what they want out of life and how, out of their situation, Greg. And you're absolutely right. There's such power in silence. And we see it in platforms like yourself when you do your presentation. We see it with comedians. We see it on those type platforms. But it is a powerful tool to utilize within your personal space. I utilize it through meditation. A meditation is a perfect example by which you can utilize power of silence. These are all different things that force is there to transform you. A lot of people, like you said, we're so busy, man. You go in the house, restaurants, and wherever. Our whole life, the modernization of our society has caused us to lose the value of being quiet. And we see everyone tries to get their 2 weeks so that they can spend some money to run to try and get some silence. And it is absolutely madness to watch our society as a people. And I love that you spend the time talking about that, because people need to understand it's not a place to run from, man. Don't run from it. It is a place where I think where you gain your power, where you you begin to dig even deeper with yourself in reflection and inflection and all the different things that you do. To me, it is a place of power. And I use it, I tell people, every time we see, because of my background as Christianity and stuff like that, every time we see Jesus, that man went and hid from all his craziness. And the next time we see him, he's walking on water, feeding 4,000 and all that kind of stuff. So that tells me that there's some kind of power he was tapping into when he separated from people. So we shouldn't be afraid to be in a space of quietness. It's a place of power. It is a place of growth. It's something to run to and not to run from. And it is my hope that people, again, man, you guys got to listen to this podcast. I love what he's saying. He's talking about those forces that are there to assist you in becoming the best human spirit. And he's presenting it and putting it in a format where you can digest it, you can eat it, and you can regurgitate what he's saying. So that this flavor tastes good, Greg. You're cooking up some good stuff, man. I like this dish.
Thanks, Ken.
Here you are. You are this. And guys, I'll put so you can see his dossier. It's a big thing. He's all over the place traveling, talking to the powers that be. And I want to thank you for coming by and spending some time with us, man, because for me, you have said a few things that I need to go and meditate on to, again, re-deposit into my spirit, as they say. We need to re-up as the young kids. I'm learning some stuff from my granddaughter, man. She's telling me I need to re-up. So, and just to keep yourself fresh and growing, because this dance that we are in, Gregory, it's a beautiful dance. It is our hope that people listen to this podcast, join us, join in the dance, and to learn.
That'd be awesome. And you know, if they want to follow along, I'm on all the major socials, Gregory Offner. I'd love to connect. And I'd love to know how I can help. That's why I do this, is give service. I believe we've got a duty to discover what it is we can contribute to the world and then go do it.
I believe that.
thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak to your audience and to speak with you.
And definitely we will make sure that all your stuff is available so that everyone can get to you in every arena that you are there, so that they can begin the conversation, get into your space, learn who you are, and so that you can teach them and challenge them to find out, to hook up who you are, what you're supposed to do on this planet, so that we can do this, so I could see it, so Greg can hear your testimony, as they say, up in church, so that we can hear all your stuff that you have accomplished, man, because we want to hear those things. Am I right, man?
Yeah. Amen. I'm thinking, you know, one of the things that I could do that might be valuable for your audience is to give them, you know, something that for me as a musician is pretty, I think it's pretty standard. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that all musicians, if we're speaking to a musician, it's going to be standard. But I think for the average person, they don't think about this, and it's called the performer's process. And mm-hmm. so if they're trying to develop one of these new habits, or if they use that root goal process and they arrive at their true goal, their root goal, now like, all right, well, how do I develop a skill to get good at that? Mm-hmm. That would be valuable for them to understand this process. So what I'd invite them to do is if they go to my website at gregoryofner.com, if they scroll all the way down to the bottom, there is a link there to get performer's process. I'd love for them to have it absolutely free of charge, just as a show of gratitude for the opportunity. And I think that it will do a lot in terms of helping them get where they want to be. So
excellent. I'll mention that as well. Thank you so much, sir.
All right, Ken.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.